Welcome to the Knowledge Chamber. I'm your host, Robert Hess. Today we have an interesting project we're going to take a look at that isn't quite released yet. Joining me today is Joshua Nishan. Now, you've got a project called Gestalt.
Gestalt.
Yeah, it makes me feel like I should have like a psychiatrist couch or something here and playing the role of Sigmund Freud.
That was supposed to be a code name, but he really liked it.
He campaigned
for it.
It's a good name, yeah.
So what exactly is it if it's not psychology?
You want to take half a stab at this and I can join you?
Sure. Yeah, so what we've done with Gestalt is we took a look at the way that these RIA programming models were...
RIA is...
The rich internet apps.
Interactive apps. Oh, never mind. Yeah, I'm bringing up the whole debate.
That's right, yeah. So frameworks like Adobe Air, Flash, Silverlight, that are ways to build these, graphically powerful and programmatically powerful web apps, but they're always kind of black box, plugins that you develop everything separately, where, Nishant and I are primarily web developers, and we're used to this model where, you can look at somebody's page and do a view source, you can see what their JavaScript is, you can see what their markup is, what their CSS is, you can paste it into your own text editor, you don't need to install a big IDE, and you're up and running. You change a couple things, hit refresh in your browser, and you go back and forth. So to us, the web model always makes a lot of sense. There's advantages to this kind of heavier IDE model as well, that you get rich debugging and profiling and so on, which it's taken a while for that to come into the web development world with things like Venkman and Firebug and the IE8 developer toolbar. But really... what we were going for is how can we take some of the things that we have in these other powerful frameworks, like the whole .NET class libraries, Link, open source projects like Iron Ruby and Iron Python, the rich markup like XAML, or even being able to use the new HTML5 tags, but instead of having it be this completely separate thing, have it just be part of the HTML programming model that everybody knows and loves and is comfortable with. So that's kind of where the name Gestalt comes in, that it's, if you can see the thing as being a whole, as a whole rather than just a bunch of separate plug-in components that you have to stitch together, then what would it look like?
So essentially what you're saying is rather than having the HTML in the your .html file simply be a wrapper that is referencing these little black boxes of Flash contents or Silverlight content or whatever, you're actually taking that Silverlight code that would have been in that black box file and putting it in line in the HTML?
You're putting it in line. You're actually linking it. So you have both models. So you can just take XAML or Python or Ruby and just... So now effectively, you can do script language equals Python or script language equals Ruby, where in the past, it would just be script language equals JavaScript, right? And to the same light, it's kind of ironic that we call them rich internet applications, where that would mean that the poor ones, or the regular ones, are XHTML, CSS, and AJAX. But to build a rich app, you go into this completely different environment, and then you finally plop out something that you house in a poor internet application, to like really molest an analogy. So really, to me, the thing that I like is, to me, this is intuitive. It's intuitive for me to just fire up a text editor, write some stuff, then fire it up in the browser, see if it worked, right? Make a few changes, fire it up in the browser again. There's no compilation step. There are no special tools to do any of this stuff. So now you can just take the XAML that Blend generates and just pop it into an XML tag, add class equals XAML, and when you fire it up in the browser with no compilation, guess what? You actually get that XAML rendered. And the same thing happens with the Python and Ruby. And of course, we're using some great features of basically the DLR to do this in the background. But I mean, that's not what we want to talk
DLR
about.
DLR being
the dynamic language runtime, which I'll pass it back to you.
Yeah, yeah. So really, we just imagine if HTML supported script equals language equals Ruby, language equals Python. You could write Ruby. Ruby's so expressive, and imagine writing Ruby directly against your HTML divs and spans, hooking onto HTML buttons and so on. So what we've done is we found a way to kind of hijack the dynamic language runtime to accomplish this in a cross-browser, cross-platform way. So now you can just insert these other language blocks directly into your HTML, and you know it's going to work on Chrome, Firefox, it's going to work on Safari on the Mac, and so on. Mm-hmm. So,
language equals C sharp?
No, it's theoretically possible. We chose not to just because you know, we think that for the web development community, you know, Python and Ruby are both completely open source. They have, you know, vibrant communities and so on. You could argue that C sharp is an ECMA and ISO standard, so it is an international standard. And you know, maybe somebody will extend our framework and add C sharp. There's no reason you couldn't do that, but we thought we'd start with Ruby and Python.
Yeah, we are under MSPL and we're open source, so we're hoping someone will actually take it and do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe even language equals fourth or COBOL.
Yes.
Yeah,
and in fact, there is a version, I think, I just saw a version of Groovy that runs on the DLR, so it would be trivial to add that. I mean, there's all kinds of random languages.
The R language.
Yeah.
So this sounds like, since you are doing some stuff with the CLR and you are doing things with Silverlight and stuff like that, that there's a little bit of extra weights attached to including this on your pages, because, you know, the browser, obviously out of the box, isn't able to support exactly what you're doing.
Yes.
Right. And the extra weight, which is what we're shipping, is in the form of gestalt.zip. And the zip file essentially has, to me, two main components. One is gestalt.js. And that's what Joshua wrote, that basically pulls out all these code snippets and then passes them to the DLR, compiles it, and then injects it back as an object tag. And on the other part, we have some zaps, essentially, that sit next to this JavaScript file that serve as the container that's pushed back as an object tag. So effectively, it's a library like no other. It's like any other, like jQuery, where you just have an include at the top, script, language equals JavaScript, and you link off to gestalt.js. You throw the files on your server or your development box, wherever you're doing it. And the moment you have that, gestalt lights up in your page.
And then it preprocesses your HTML and then re-renders essentially the HTML to the browser in a way the browser can understand, that includes essentially the black boxes of Silverlight.
Yeah, it basically pulls out the part that the browser just doesn't understand naturally, right, which would be the Python, the Ruby, and the XAML, and injects those back into the browser after pre-processing them. And all this happens in a matter of milliseconds when you fire up the browser. You don't have a compiler or anything.
Milliseconds, depending on how fast your computer is, I suppose.
Some people
still have old computers that might take a few more milliseconds than others.
Possibly.
Yeah. So the important thing is, from a developer perspective, all you really have to do is add this this link to gestalt.js at the top of your page, and then the Python and Ruby just automatically work. And really the reason we chose to do this is really how the web has been being extended over the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, that you have people, you know, like, you know, Prototype, jQuery, and so on, that build these libraries that extend the browser the way that they think the browser should have been extended. And then rather than waiting for all the browser vendors to implement these features, they implement them as a little JavaScript library that you can add to the top of your page. People use them, and, you know, after they get popular enough, then maybe the browser vendors will choose to implement them.
Right.
So it's a model that's natural for web developers. Everybody knows how to add jQuery to the top of their page or whatever. So.
Yeah, I think when people see this, even if it, you know, we're in beta, we're going to be launching in beta, and at this point we haven't launched, but despite the little bugs and nuances, when front-end web developers see this, they're going to go, oh, it's going to be very natural. It's going to be one of those things that just, oh yeah, that makes sense. It's just, this is how I've been doing stuff.
And then, speaking of availability, when do you expect this to be available to people to download and use?
Well, I think by the time this video is out there, it will be available at visitmix.com.
Okay. What I'll do is I'll make sure that this video isn't available until it is out there. I'll check with you. So if you guys are watching this video, whatever that is, it'll be available. I'll have a link in the description thing showing you exactly where to go to download and access this stuff. Yeah. I think it's time for a demo.
Sure. Yeah. This
Wait. That's... Never seen that computer before. What's that little weird little white blob on the back?
It's actually a Windows 7 machine. It's a brand new Dell. I always go on a sort of rant when you know, people sometimes give me a hard time about it. It's just all jokingly.
And I feel I have to give you a hard time about it.
You have to. I mean, as a shareholder. but Microsoft was a company that bought me my first Mac, and this is my Mac. So. Mm-hmm. It's near and dear to me. Okay, so I guess I wasn't supposed to pull up this page, but this is the site where you're going to finally land up. Just go to visitmix.com, and you'll find very clear links to get to the Gestalt site. And we have several things here. You'll be able to, you know, go through a very simple getting started sort of tutorial that shows you what are the highlights of Gestalt. You can go download the library. What we will be releasing as a part of the Gestalt release are a bunch of TextMate bundles. So TextMate, for those who don't know, I would say is probably one of the most popular text editors on the Mac. And they have a very, very rich extensibility story. So what we've basically done is we've created two bundles, one for Gestalt itself and one for XAML that gives you things like tab completion and escape keys and those kind of things. So this is basically a site. Go check it out at your leisure. We're going to have a bunch of samples there too, which is really what I sort of want to take folks through. So maybe we can start at the top and do like the simplest scenario, right? Where you have a button on a page, I click it, and an alert window pops up. Everyone's done the Hello World alert sample, right? Now, if you go into the page source, this is where you start seeing some of the magic, so to speak. What you see here is what Joshua was talking about, which is just the script tag, right, that links to Gestalt and, you know, the library sitting next to these samples.
And I notice you're also including jQuery. Is that necessary for Gestalt to have jQuery as well?
Yeah, we decided to keep a dependency on jQuery because it's something that pretty much every website has these days, so we didn't think it was an overhead. But the bigger reason, too, was jQuery handles cross-browser extraction of stuff, right? DOM manipulation really well. They've really ironed out all the issues. And we want to make sure that Gestalt works well cross-platform, so we're extracting all the tags and all the code really well. So essentially,
We could do the work to remove the jQuery dependency, but really we're trying to emphasize the fact that everything Gestalt does is supposed to be a good citizen with other JavaScript framework libraries, with any kind of Ajax development that people do, and so on. So
yeah. Yep. So if you actually go in here, you see, you know, your typical body tag, and you have the button right there. But the interesting part is right here, right? You have script language equals Ruby, and now you have very expressive Ruby within the page that actually fires up the window alert. So this is not such a fancy sample. We have another one that's sort of demonstrates, just watch the button closely, it changed to Hello World. This demonstrates doing the same thing in Python, right? So now we have Python support too. I have a little sample here that basically this thing that's rendered here, if you refresh it, you almost see it loading up, is actually XAML. And if you go into the page source, what I've done is I've just taken XAML pushed it in an XML tag here, right? And what's happening in the background is Gestalt just loads it up and injects it into the DOM. What you can also do, which we sort of talked about, is if you don't want to do inline XAML, you can actually link it, right? So I have this XAML sitting off in a separate file, and that gets pulled in too. So you can have cleaner code effectively. You can take your presentation stuff and put it out. This sample, if you watch closely, the mushroom should blink. There, he blinked once. This is sort of the wait for it sample. But what we did here is we have XAML, and we just wanted to demonstrate that, you know, some of the things like storyboards are really possible. Effectively, you can do pretty much anything you can do in Blend or Silverlight. You can bring it in here and do it in the XAML out here. And here's a sample that sort of ties all those concepts together, where you have, you know, just a DOM element, basically just an HTML element, like a text field. When you hit go, it pushes that out into the page and pulls it through the XAML. And this is really where you start seeing the power, where you have a rich element on the page, which is this XAML element that renders all these paths and things that are very tough to do just with HTML. But then when you go down here, you just have a script that can very quickly go get the blinking mushroom and then, you know, trigger some methods on it, and you know, it can handle some events and so on and so forth.
Now, so in here, so you got the XAML blob in your HTML, and you got the Python script code that's interacting with that XAML blob. Both those are pieces of code that the Gestalt thing is actually supporting directly. What about if I had JavaScript? Could I do this exact same thing in JavaScript?
Yep. Yep, and that doesn't change. That's been the case since Silverlight 1. You can still do all this stuff to the JavaScript. That is one of the powerful aspects. I mean, I don't want to talk more about Silverlight because this is not some Silverlight play for us, but the powerful aspect of Silverlight is that it exposes itself to the DOM really well. It's very transparent, and we sort of just leverage that. So these are some really simple samples. You can do some more fancier stuff, like here you see a sample that shows you how to do transforms using Python. We can get into some more complicated ones where you can do something that's something like this. And you know, I'm not going to go into the code behind, but the nice thing is to really look at the code for this. You right-click View Source. Guess what? The code's all there. You can download it. You can modify it a little bit. You can do something with it yourself.
Could you possibly disable the view source on this particular sample, because I can imagine people turning their entire pages into these things that are spinning around like that. It's just kind of going out of control. It might be the new version of the blink tag or something, you know?
Well,
we
want to give people the power, and what they do with it is up to them.
If they don't have if they're not responsible, I think what was that Spider-Man quote? There's some simple samples that show you how to do trig. Forget what this one is. So some of these samples were created by one of the developers on our team, Hans, and there are some really cool samples which should help you learn how to implement concepts like object-oriented programming within your scripting environment. So this does some 2.5D stuff. Here's a simple particle sample. So we've done some particles work too, where you do some snow. I forget what some of these are. Oh yeah, here are some more particle samples. So, I mean, what we're going to do when we launch this thing is we're going to have in the range of 15 to 20 samples out there, because I think any one of us who does this for a career, we know we just go look at other people's examples and learn from that. So we're hoping that this will be a good sort of starter kit for people to really dig into what Gestalt can do. But we're also really hoping, like Joshua said, that sort of a community forms around it and they start contributing samples as well as more knowledge and, of course, filing bugs and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. How big is your team?
Five people. And Gestalt, it was the two of us, and Hans joined very recently to help us out with the samples.
Mm-hmm. So essentially three developers working on Gestalt itself.
Yeah, I would say 1.5 developers. Yeah. It was
so
pretty much Josh.
What exactly is your goal? I mean, this is not really a Microsoft product per se. Yeah. It's more a resource.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about this is that, you know, anybody can take our samples, do a view source, copy-paste the text directly from our samples into their favorite text editor on a Macintosh if they want to, hit refresh in the browser, and it just works. So there's none of this, installing all these big tools through this kind of heavyweight process. But really, our team isn't about, creating new products. It's nice that all this works. You can ship production stuff in it. You can do whatever you want with it. But really, what we're trying to do is to show some possibilities, to show some possible ways that the browser could be extended. So it's similar to jQuery in that sense, that it's a useful tool. It's also, an interesting way that you might want to extend the browser, and it can kind of start a conversation that, maybe the community will look at this and come back and say, well, we think that the way that you embed the language tag should be a little bit different. And these are kinds of feedback that we can quickly respond to. All the source code for this is available under a BSD style license, so anybody can use it for profit or not profit, whatever they want, without paying anything. All the source code can be used in any way that they like. So that's really our goal with this, is that if people use it on their sites, that's awesome. If people come back with opinions about, we think the browser should evolve this way or that way, then we can try it out. It's kind of this rich toolkit that lets us experiment with these things.
I mean, for the sake of argument, I mean, here I am in TextMate, right? And I pull the sample up, and it's as simple as doing something like this, where I swap this out, save it, go back here, and says hello, Joshua. Right, mm-hmm. And that, to me, that's just really powerful. Where that you can do that, in a matter of seconds.
Instant gratification.
It's the instant gratification, right? That's the web. That's for our generation. That's just ADD.
And I think, longer term, this is the sort of thing that if you look at the Mozilla project, periodically releases these experiments or labs that they do that are not necessarily something they're going to put in the product, but they just want to get the ideas out there, see how it works out. And maybe it will influence the product in the future. Who knows? And this is somewhat related to something that Mozilla did a couple years ago that they were calling the Iron Monkey project, where they were embedding Iron Ruby and Iron Python, which is incidentally the same languages that we support, directly into the Mozilla browser. It would be a custom build and so on. But what we realized is that to support this on Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Opera, and IE, we don't need to create a custom build of a browser or anything. We can just kind of leverage what's already out there.
So the browsers are flexible enough already to allow people to build these sorts of things on top of them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think this is what's really, you've really seen this take off in the last 5 years with like Dojo is another example. The Dojo JavaScript framework library, very popular library. And the authors of this, some of the contributors started saying, well, rather than just being able to do selectors and stuff, what if we could do, for example, offline support? And rather than waiting for all the browser vendors to come along and implement some offline support, actually, I think it was Brad Neuberg just went ahead and said, hey, I could write my own little JavaScript library that kind of hijacks some of the capabilities of Flash that happens to be on a ton of machines already to support offline support. The nice thing about doing that is that then when something comes along, some other framework comes along like Google Gears, then he could switch out his underlying code, the users wouldn't have to really change their programming model, and he just kind of leverages what's available. Mm-hmm. So it kind of helps push the evolution of the web along. It helps experiment with things that, you may throw them away. People may stop using them after something better comes along, but it's kind of a stopgap that, mm-hmm. You don't have to wait for this 5 years of evolution.
Right. And so then what you're doing, you're basically hijacking the Silverlight engine, which is going to be supporting the CLR and stuff like that. The web developer has to reference the JavaScript files to bring in the stuff.
Yep.
The user has to have Silverlight on their system.
Yes.
And together, all those things just merge together, and you have this great experience.
Yeah. And to be clear, the main thing we're leveraging is the dynamic language runtime, which incidentally, all of the source code for the dynamic language runtime, which is an open source project. This was actually John Lamb and Jim Huguenin were working separately on Iron Python and Iron Ruby. They came to Microsoft, and when they came to work on this dynamic language runtime, they said at the time that, we're not going to build this dynamic language runtime as a proprietary feature. So even though it runs inside of Silverlight, all of the source code for this DLR is also public and open source and mm-hmm. takes contributions and so on. Mm-hmm. So that's really the piece that we're leveraging to accomplish this.
I think this sounds really exciting. I mean, I'm the type of person, I like using Notepad for doing my web development anyway, and I can see having a lot of fun with this. So what I'm really excited about is kind of seeing what happens once it's released, and how does it start being used on websites, and how does the community start seeing it, adopting it, and then expanding it beyond those capabilities.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us. I appreciate getting this little insight into what Gestalt is. And like I said, by the time this episode is on air, you'll get a chance to download and install it immediately. So hopefully that gave you what you need to know to be your own Gestalt expert.